Rat Pack, where you at?
What's going on? It's the FTM Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Jeff Rackliff, and it is Friday, November 10th. A bland start to Week 10 with that barn burner between the Bears and the Panthers, but it is an exciting week with a lot of big-name players on bye and a lot of injury-moving parts. So let's dive right in. The final international game will kick off at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Sunday morning. Set yourself a reminder, especially the West Coast folks. I know it's early, but you don't want to get burnt by a surprise inactive. Most likely, it's nothing, right? It's just precautionary, but better to be safe than to be sorry. I have this Indianapolis 21.9 to 20.6 over New England. On the Indianapolis side, I was really surprised to find this stat out, but the Colts are the only team in the NFL with 20-plus points in every game this season. That's pretty wild. And a lot of credit goes to Gardner Minshew. It hasn't always been pretty with him as the starter, but if you look at what he's done over the last 4 weeks, he's the number 8 fantasy quarterback over that span of time. Now, I'm not going to rank him that highly this week, but he is in play as a 2-quarterback option. Of course, he is peppering Michael Pittman Jr. with targets, 86 of them on the season. That's tied for the 6th most in the league, and he's also tied with Tyreek Hill for the league lead with 6 games of 8-plus receptions. Josh Downs may not play in this one as well. He's dinged up. I don't have an injury report for Indianapolis as of this moment. As far as Jonathan Taylor is concerned, he played 75% of the snaps last week. Zach Moss played 19%. So if you have these two, well, good. You have Taylor's handcuff. If you only have Moss, well, you have Taylor's handcuff. You don't have a startable option any longer. You may want to try and trade him. You may consider that to the Jonathan Taylor manager. Otherwise, your days of using Moss, I think, are over. They were good while they lasted. Now, he does have that implied value if Taylor went down again. We know what we're looking at with Moss. On the other side, we know what we're looking at. It's not good. I mean, DeMario Douglas is at least usable as a wide receiver 3, and the matchup is very good for Ramondre Stevenson. We saw Stevenson's sighting last week. It wasn't bad, but he's had 10 or fewer carries in 4 straight games. By the same token, he is seeing an uptick in the passing game. There's enough here for him to be an RB2, but I also wouldn't be surprised if we saw some Ezekiel Elliott down in the red area of the field, which not optimal for anybody. All right, speaking of not optimal, there are a lot of injuries in this next contest, Houston, Cincinnati, so let's run through them here. Here's what we know on the Houston side. 2 main fantasy, or viable fantasy options, I should say, who look unlikely to play: Damian Pierce and Nico Collins. So the impact here, well, Dalton Schultz, by the way, he's going to be fine, and that does kind of help because there's going to be more available targets. So he's a top 10 option in a great matchup. But the main impact, Tank Dell is all the way up at wide receiver 10. Yes, you heard that correctly. And I will also move Noah Brown into the top 36. I haven't done so at FTN. Like, if you're listening to this immediately after it publishes, I haven't done so yet, and I will get around to this in a bit when we get all the injury info. Updates take a good bit of time, so I try to wait to get all of those practice reports in before I do any sort of updates. But Noah Brown will be usable this week, so if you picked him up, not too shabby. If Collins is in fact not going to play, but he went DNP, so I don't think that happens. CJ Stroud is still fine. He's going to be a top 12 option. On the other side, T. Higgins, unlikely to play. Jamar Chase does look likely to play, so at least we have that. He'll be a top 5 option. Tyler Boyd will move into the top 25. Now, he's not going to move into the top 15 or anything like that, I don't think, but he will be very usable as a wide receiver 2 option in this contest. So many injury moving pieces there. All right, New Orleans, Minnesota. And by the way, my projection for that game, I had 26.0 to 21.0. I know that number is going to move a little bit, but I still expect it to be heavily slanted towards Cincinnati. They got the home field advantage there. New Orleans, Minnesota. New Orleans, 22.3 to 19.6. On the New Orleans side, the legend of Taysom Hill continues to grow. He became the first player since 1983 to have 50-plus rushing yards, a passing completion, and 10-plus receiving yards in back-to-back games. And the last person to do it, actually really surprising to me, it was Marcus Allen, not who I would have guessed, although I don't even know if I would have had a guess if you say 1983. But anyway, hey, it is easy to fall in love with the production. I do have him as a top 10 option. The challenge is we've seen this out of Taysom Hill before, and he has turned back into a pumpkin. So my general thought process is use him just knowing that's a full, very real possibility with Taysom. Alvin Kamara, still a top 10 option. He was outcarried by Taysom Hill last week, but 1 week isn't a trend in the NFL, so let's give him the benefit of the doubt here. On the other side, Josh Dobbs, that folk hero. I am at quarterback 15, so he's usable in Superflex. He's not usable in one quarterback leagues, most likely, unless you're really desperate this week. He has Jordan Addison. TJ Hockenson said he's going to play through injury. Addison, a front-end wide receiver too. Hockenson is going to be just fine. He's still an elite play. No Justin Jefferson this week. So the window opened up on Sunday. They had 21 days from Sunday to activate him. He said he wants to be 100% before he gets back, so it does sound like they're getting him integrated into practice, and then he'll eventually be back out there. That's good news. Alexander Mattison, brutal matchup here for him. New Orleans quite good against the run, but he has no competition for touches, so he comes in at RB20 for me this week. Moving on to Green Bay and Pittsburgh. I have Pittsburgh 20.8 to 18.8. On the Packers side, we're reaching that dangerous territory where there's very few usable fantasy options. Right now, Aaron Jones, who is very usable, he is RB14 for me this week. They took the training wheels off him last week. 73 rushing yards. That was the first game over 50 rushing yards he had this season. Yes, he had a long play back in week one, but that did come on a reception. The Steelers are a favorable matchup for the run game, not for the passing game. 112.6 rushing yards per game allowed to opposing backfields. So I'm confident in him. I'm just not confident in Jordan Love against this Steelers pass rush. That puts a damper on Christian Watson, wide receiver 38, Romeo Doubs, wide receiver 40. On the other side, Diontae Johnson, oh man, it was 119 consecutive receptions, by the way, without a touchdown. That was the second longest streak in NFL history among wide receivers. So not good, but he did get in the end zone. More importantly, has 20 catches over three games since returning from injury. Have him as a top 20 play. However, his presence now has created this boom or bust profile for George Pickens, which wasn't really there when Johnson was out. Now with Pickens, I mean, essentially it's a Gabe Davis type situation. If you use him, be prepared. Any given week, he can go off. Any given week, like last week, he had two catches for negative 1 yards. And I think Gabe Davis is a great case study here. So 2 weeks ago, Gabe Davis went bananas. That was one of his lowest starting percentages of the season. In other words, fewer fantasy managers started him than at any other point during the season that week. So he went off on benches. Last week, it was his highest starting percentage the entire season, and he had zero fantasy points. So what's the moral here? It's with these boomer bust guys, I think you just have to stay the course. And if they're the best starting option according to rankings, then you start them every week. And you are just fully realizing that it could be bad any given week, but it could also be amazing. And there's very rarely a midpoint with this type of receiver. Najee Harris, RB23, Jalen Warren, RB27. So I don't think anything's changed there from Wednesday. Najee Harris, actually sneaky good DFS play this week, though, because price point is really cheap on DK. Tennessee-Tampa, 20.4 to 20.1, a close game in projections. This one should actually be pretty fun. Now, last week, we saw a rookie quarterback take it to the Tampa passing defense, 470 yards and 5 touchdowns from C.J. Stroud. This week, Will Levis, opportunity knocks. Now, I don't think that it's going to be that crazy, but Levis does have the ability to push the ball downfield. He's got big arm. We have yet to see him run, really. Like, his mobility has not been on display yet, and he has it. So that's another element to his game that will eventually emerge here, because obviously now he is the starter going forward. I have him at quarterback 19, so it's a great matchup. I am somewhat tempering expectations, of course, but I am going to use him in Superflex. DeAndre Hopkins, top 10. Derrick Henry, since week four, leads the NFL in rushing yards. He has 435. He has 20-plus touches in back-to-back games. Derrick Henry, even in a tough matchup, top 12 play. Great play this season from Baker Mayfield, and I'm happy to see that. He seemingly has found a home after bouncing around there. I mean, obviously, he was, you know, Browns, then to the Panthers, then to the Rams. We knew the Rams wasn't going to last. And now got this opportunity, back-to-back games with two-plus passing touchdowns. Hadn't done that since 2021. He's quarterback 12 for me in this one. It's not the best matchup, but when you have Mike Evans out there, Chris Godwin out there, Cade Otton surging, giving you a little bit of a safety blanket, it's a really good spot for Baker, and he is performing well. Rashad White, I would not say is performing well on the ground, but he is performing well as a pass catcher. Did you realize he is second among running backs in receptions with 33, second among running backs in receiving yards with 292? It's that work in the passing game that any given week really salvages RB2 value for him, even if he doesn't do well on the ground. Now, last week he did, but this is not a good matchup for Rashad White. He's also seventh highest touch share in the league, 38%. So Rashad White, RB13 this week. San Francisco, Jacksonville. A very intriguing game for me with both of these teams coming back from bye, and that's not why it's intriguing, but San Francisco on a bit of a backslide. Jacksonville looking pretty decent. Like, they look like a team that is certainly built for the postseason. I do have San Francisco getting off the schneid, though, 23.7 to 21.7. Start them if you got them. I mean, there isn't that much analysis here. Like, yes, I guess I can talk about the bad matchups for the Jags guys, but I'm still going to use them. Brock Purdy, quarterback 7. McCaffrey, quarterback 1. Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver 7. Debo's going to be back, wide receiver 17. George Kittle, tight end 4. I mean, start the entire side there. Now, the other side, like Etienne, yes, it's not a great matchup, but over his last four games, he has 493 scrimmage yards and 7 touchdowns. He's still a top 10 play. Christian Kirk, Calvin Ridley. Actually, those are more neutral matchups, believe it or not. I'm not that intimidated by the San Francisco secondary. I wouldn't say they're bad, but I'd say more neutral matchups. Evan Ingram's going to be in starting lineups every week. He's one of those, if I have this tight end, I feel good about life tight ends. Now, Trevor Lawrence, I understand why some people don't want to use him. And if that applies to you, then guess what? Don't use him. But why do I have him ranked at quarterback 10? Because he's been playing very good football. And sometimes the fantasy numbers don't match the play on the field. And it could be on either side. Sometimes fantasy numbers look great, the play is poor, or vice versa. But eventually things even out. So he's going to continue to be one of these like fringy quarterback ones regardless of the matchup, as long as he keeps playing good football. Again, though, if you don't want to use him, don't use him. I'm not forcing you to do anything. I'm just giving you my take on these things. Cleveland and Baltimore. Baltimore, 22.5 to 17.2. Bad matchups abound in this one on both sides. We're talking some primetime elite defenses right here on both sides. Let's focus on the Cleveland side first and foremost. I don't like a lot here. Like, I can use Amari Cooper as a wide receiver 3, maybe flex Jerome Ford or Kareem Hunt, but bad matchups really across the board. But I really wanted to key in on Deshaun Watson. Comes back. Looks decent. Didn't really have to do that much last week for them to win the game. Now, I'm encouraged, yes. I'm not using him if I can get away with it this week. I'm down at quarterback 22. The Ravens have been just a brutal matchup for quarterbacks. They are the lone defense holding opposing quarterbacks to under a passing score per game. It's 0.7 to be precise. A really bad spot. So if you have Watson, and you don't have anybody else to drop, and you don't want to start Watson, and there is a viable starting option on waivers, it's not outlandish to drop Watson. I know if it was week one, it would be pretty crazy to drop Watson because our expectations for him were, you know, that he essentially was going to be like a top 10 guy, if not better. That hasn't come to fruition. Yes, we were trending in the right direction last week, but if you don't have anybody else to drop, he may be your drop. Something to consider there with him. On the other side, it's a bad matchup for Lamar. I don't care. The last time he was in this matchup, he had 2 passing scores and 2 rushing scores. Same thing like Mark Andrews. Don't care. Using him. Zay Flowers comes in at wide receiver 36. It's not a terrible matchup for him, and they may need to use him here because it could end up being a relatively close game. As far as the backfield is concerned, Gus Edwards is still the preferred fantasy option, only at RB32. Yes, Keaton Mitchell blew up last week, but he is not a viable starting option for me just yet. And it has nothing to do with the fact that he popped up on the injury report. I mean, I guess that doesn't help the cause. He got limited work in with a hamstring yesterday. I want to see it happen more than once before I'm willing to just put Keaton Mitchell in every starting lineup. I love him on benches right now. Don't get me wrong. And sometimes, you know, I want to be a week or two ahead on a guy. With Keaton Mitchell, I think we were several weeks ahead on him, and then he got widely dropped. But just because he had a good game last week doesn't mean he's going to this week, especially in this matchup, so I have him at RB42. However, much like Devon Achane earlier in the season, if we see it again, then it's on. It is on. Moving on to Atlanta, Arizona. Atlanta 22.2 to 21.0. Arthur Smith. Ugh. He has done a number on Bijan Robinson. So over his last five games, Bijan averages under 40 rushing yards per game. It's 39.8. Over his first four games of the season, he averaged 79.5, which I think we could deal with that. If Bijan's out there putting up basically 80 rushing yards a game, I think everybody's cool. He is not doing that now. And yet, I'm still going to rank him at RB10 because this is a phenomenal matchup. Third most fantasy points per game allowed to opposing running backs. And that means Tyler Allgeier could be flexed out. I have him at RB28. Drake London looks like he's going to return, so we're good there. Taylor Heinicke, QB16, usable in Superflex. All right, Kyle Pitts. So I want to clarify my position on Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts is in streamer territory. He is not one of those top six or seven guys this week where if you have them, everything is right with the world. And I know you're going to want to know who the top six or seven are. Here they are: Sam Laporta, TJ Hockenson, Dalton Kincaid, Mark Andrews, George Kittle, Evan Ingram, and maybe Dalton Schultz. Now, given the Nico news, I think I'll include him. So there are seven. Pitts is one of the better streamers, but if you said, all right, I have Pitts and Taysom's out there, would you drop Pitts for Taysom? I'm streaming. So I guess I'll go with the higher option. I mean, really, my goal with streaming tight ends is who has the best chance of scoring a touchdown. I think Taysom has a better chance than Pitts, so then therefore I go with Taysom. That means Pitts could be dropped. That is not me saying drop Pitts. I'm not going to give that advice. That's crappy advice. I'm saying if you have a better option and you have a reason to make the move and it improves your outlook this week, go for it. Taysom may end up being an every week starter for us. You know, time is going to tell. He's certainly been very good over the last month, but you could still be in streamer territory. So that's a you call. It's not a me call. And I know, like, our evaluation on Pitts obviously had to change given what we've seen so far this season. Kyler Murray, let's go to the other side. So I have him at QB 13. He's been bouncing back and forth 12, 13, 14, which means he's a fringe QB1. Like, he could end up in my final rankings being 12. He could be 13. He could be 14. I don't think he's going to be any lower, but I don't also think he's going to be any higher. It is a decent matchup. Don't get me wrong. It's a tough matchup for the run game, but it could be rusty. Now, James Conner does sound like he is going to be activated, so that's good. He'll be a top 24 play. I'm using Marquise Brown as a back-end wide receiver to Trey McBride as a streamer option at tight end 10. Detroit and the Chargers, Detroit 25.5 to 23.3. Jared Goff, giddy up. The Chargers allow the second most fantasy points per game to opposing quarterbacks, so it's a great spot for him. It's a great spot for Amon-Ra, wide receiver 4. He is looking to become the first Lions wide receiver with four straight games of 100-plus receiving yards since Calvin Johnson did so back in 2012. He had 8 straight, so it's still a ways to go before that. But not too shabby. Obviously, we're using Laporta. He's the number one option for me this week. So Gibbs, Montgomery. I'm still on the they're both RB2s idea. Gibbs has a high ceiling. Monty doesn't have that ceiling, but he has the touchdowns potential here as the short yardage back. And I don't think that changes. But if you have Gibbs, just be aware that if we do go back to where we were pre-injury for David Montgomery, it's going to be pretty frustrating with Gibbs because we're talking like 8 to 12. I'm really hoping it's more like a 12 to 15 and they both get that sort of range. If they do get that range of touches, Gibbs is the better option because of his ceiling. On the other side, I'm not worried about last week for Justin Herbert. They didn't need to throw the football, so they didn't throw the football. He's still a top 10 option. Austin Eckler gets a very tough matchup, but he's RB2. Just given the overall state of things here, he's going to be used heavily. And Keenan Allen, these are the only three usable options this week. Wide receiver 5, he's averaging 6.4 receptions per game over the course of his career, which is the all-time NFL leader in that category with anybody who's played at least 100 games. Keep an eye on Quentin Johnston's usage here too. Giants, Dallas 27.2 to 11.6. Yes, 11.6. The wheels have come off here for the Giants. They're going to be starting rookie Tommy DeVito. Oh! He will be the 10th rookie, 10th different rookie quarterback to start a game this season. That's an NFL record. Yikes. Yikes in general. Saquon Barkley, the only usable option. RB17 right now. On the other side, I love Dak. Back-to-back 300-plus, three passing score games. Love CeeDee Lamb. Back-to-back career highs. The only challenge here is if game script, if they just completely blow him out and it's like multiple special teams defense touchdowns, that's the only downfall, but I'm not going to worry about that, and I'm not going to talk myself out of using Dak Prescott with how he's been playing. Tony Pollard, this could set up well for him. Over his last five games, he only has 210 rushing yards, no rushing scores. Very frustrating, but the game script sets up so well. I think he is a top five play this week. Washington, Seattle 24.4 to 19.7. Well, we have reached essentially the halfway point of the season, and only one player has more passing yards than Sam Howell, just like we drew it up, of course. Sam Howell's a top 12 option this week. All right, let's go. Let's go. Terry McLaurin, still a wide receiver 2 territory. Jahan Dotson, a wide receiver 3 territory. Be careful with Antonio Gibson. I know last week looked good, but he is not flex worthy for me this week. Brian Robinson is a great matchup for Geno. A great matchup. Washington is the number one matchup for quarterbacks. So Geno, a top 10 play with Lockett, Metcalf. Smith and Jigba is possibly flex worthy, but Lockett and Metcalf are in wide receiver 2 territory. Kenneth Walker practicing in full, so he's a top 12 option. The Jets, Raiders, 19.6, 19.1. Jets by a half point here in my projections. This one does not have many usable options. We have Breece Hall, Josh Jacobs, Garrett Wilson, and Devontae Adams, maybe Jacoby Myers as a wide receiver 3. This one really is going to set up well for the run game, though. So load up on that if you're playing a showdown slate. Jacobs gets a top 10 matchup, number 7 matchup. Breece gets the number 4 matchup, so it sets up well for the run game on both sides. Denver and Buffalo, 26.3 to 20.4. Yeah, Denver did beat the Chiefs, but I find it hard to believe that they're going to go into Buffalo and give the Bills a run for their money. But we should still see a lot of run out of Javonte Williams. 30 touches the last time we saw him back in week 8. He solidified as the clear lead back. He is an RB2 or better every week. He's a front-end RB2 option this week. I think you can use Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy as wide receiver 3s, and Russ could potentially be a streamer in one quarterback leagues because of the potential game script they're going to have to throw probably to keep pace here. Allen, Diggs, duh. Kincaid, duh. Gabe Davis, we know. We know what to expect out of him. So the big question mark, will Leonard Fournette actually be elevated from practice squad for this one? I don't know. But you know what? If he is, it doesn't change my outlook on James Cook. James Cook is a between the 20s back, which unfortunately doesn't translate to a lot of fantasy value, but we have yet to see that long touchdown. Now, I'm not going to start him just based on that. It's a great matchup. That's the number one. Number two, he's much better at home for some reason. On the season, he's averaging 72.5 rushing yards per game at home, 43.2 rushing yards per game on the road. Very weird, but it is true. I have him at RB22 for the week. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. If you want all these rankings updated throughout the course of the weekend, up to lock there on Sunday afternoon, ftnfantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. Of course, I'm at Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter and at Jeff Ratcliffe on Instagram. Enjoy the football this weekend, and I will catch you on the flip side for the biggest takeaways from week 10. I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out.